Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancastrian co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. So Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, pretty good, actually. Obviously, Test cricket is back in England, which is good. Yeah, England against New Zealand should be a really, really good two-test series, which I'm not a fan of two-test series, but I guess you can't really complain. I've just never really been a fan of them, but yeah, it should be hopefully a really good two tests. You know, some debuts in there for Bracey and Robinson. So yeah, it should be a really good two tests. Hopefully England can come out on top, but just generally, it'll be good to see how England go against. I think they're the best team in the world, aren't they, New Zealand? They're ranked number one, or are they ranked number two?
Second at the moment. India are
second
first.
Second at the moment. There you go. Okay. Well, the second best team in the world. So yeah, it's going to be a really good series.
Absolutely. 100%, Joe, it is. Sun shining at Lord's, crowds are back as well. The English Test Summit is here and it is absolutely wonderful to see. It really, really is. But Joe, we aren't here to talk about Test cricket today because we have got the absolute pleasure of being joined here on the County Cricket Podcast today by your favourite ever Lancashire player, Joe. So I know this is a massive podcast for you, mate. I'm looking forward to this 100%. As well. Because listeners, we are joined by the one and only former Lancashire and Nottinghamshire batsman, Ashwell Prince. So, Ashwell, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining us here on the podcast today. How's your day been so far, mate?
Good afternoon, James. It's an absolute pleasure to join you on the podcast today. We've had a quiet day today. We're off-season at the moment, obviously just planning all our pre-season stuff at the moment. So, pretty chill with my side in Cape Town. Just listening to the intro there, you know, I haven't been able to get the telly on yet this morning, but it's quite good to have Test cricket back, especially Lord, listening to you, boy. The weather sounds good. Two good teams going at it, so I'm looking forward to getting some screen time in later today.
Exactly, Ashwell. Get 100%. Watching it. I mean, New Zealand so far are dominating England, it has to be said. Devon Conway played for the Lions, didn't he? Back in the day, Devon Conway in Johannesburg.
He did, yeah.
Then made the move to Wellington, now making his debut for New Zealand in Test cricket. And yeah, he's looking pretty good. 25 and out so far as we are recording this. But as I said, gents, we aren't here to talk about Test cricket. As much as we all love Test cricket, it is the pinnacle of the game. We are here to talk with you, Ashwell, about your time at Lancashire and your cricketing journey. So before we get into the discussion about county cricket, Ashwell, I want to transport you all the way back to the origins of your cricketing journey. So what were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching the game?
Well, yeah, guys, we're going back some time now. I turned, last week was my birthday, I turned 44. So going back, the first memory, going back some time, probably go back a good 40 years, if not more than that. Thinking of my first memory is playing just in the back garden as the youngest of three boys. So just playing with my brothers in the garden and my father. So those would have been my earliest memories. And obviously, my dad and my oldest brother played in the leagues as well. So that would have meant that on a Saturday afternoon, that's where you'd find me around. Well, Saturday, most of the day, basically around the boundary of a cricket field, following my dad and my oldest brother around. So. Yeah, that's the earliest memories, probably from about 3-4 years old. So it's always been there in the blood, been around the field. A bit of football as well, actually, at that age. But, you know, they were the big passions, football and cricket.
Fair play, Ashwell. Yeah, two excellent sports. And we have to mention football, Ashwell. Who do you support in your football?
It's yesterday. Where are we now? We're second June. So yesterday would have been the 2-year anniversary of Liverpool winning the Champions League for the sixth time. I was there, by the way, in Madrid. I was in Madrid when we beat Tottenham 2-0. And yeah, fair play to Chelsea, who won it this year against a very strong City team. So I see Pep is coming in for quite a bit to speak about his tactics, you know. Guys, let me just say, it's really tough being a coach. You can never get it right.
It's very unforgiving. It's very unforgiving. So, and I'm you were my favourite Lancs player, Ashwell, until you said you support Liverpool. I'm United. So. No, but I mean, going back to cricket, I mean, that's very much a family-oriented kind of, you know, like cricket upbringing, I guess you can say. And I guess that's really good to see, you know, how much your family, like, you know, lives and breathes cricket, I guess. Is a really good, like, thing to see.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, it's probably the way most people get into the game, through the family clubs. Up in Lancashire, for instance, I know that, the club cricket culture is really big. I suppose all over England, in the little villages, etc. So, you know, that's the way I got into the game. And I suppose it all stemmed from there.
Well, it is a nice journey into cricket, I have to say, Ashwell, and in particular from such a young age as well. So, as you said, cricket has always almost been this presence in your life. So it's fantastic that, of course, you went on to play cricket at the highest level. And you mentioned there about Lancashire. Okay, we have to talk about county cricket, of course. But before we talk about your days at Nottinghamshire and Lancs, in South Africa itself, Ashwell, were you ever actually able to keep up to date with county cricket? And if so, did you have any county cricketers that you kind of looked up to, per se?
I'd say in early years, obviously, we didn't have any footage. And very little on radio, if anything on radio. I don't think there was anything on radio. But I remember when I was probably, you know, starting to take a real keen interest as a teenager, 13, 14, around there, we had some South Africans playing in the county circuit. As alongside on a Monday morning, when the newspapers reported all the scorecards of the domestic cricket, they would have county scores in there. You wouldn't have the complete county scorecards, but you would have the summary of the scorecards. And obviously, we were aware of certain players at the time, who was South African players playing abroad in the county circuit. And obviously the newspapers would want to share whatever those players did, whatever the South African players did on the county scene over that weekend or whatever the case may be. So that was the extent of the following that we had. I mean, we had a few newspaper clippings with the summary of a scorecard, not even a complete scorecard.
Well, I'll tell you what, Ashrell, some things better than nothing, isn't it? So at least you were able to keep up to date in some ways. And you mentioned South African players. Who really springs to mind? I mean, one person for me as a Warwickshire fan, I unfortunately wasn't actually born at the time when he was playing for us, but Alan Donald, White Lightning himself, an absolute legend here in the West Midlands. Which kind of South African players were you talking about, Ashwell? Who really kind of caught your eye in those formative years?
Well, in those days, I mean, we kind of followed everybody. Kipler Wessels, obviously, is from Port Elizabeth, where I'm from. So, you know, you'd have been following people like that. Then another person who was a fast bowler. I don't think he played a lot of cricket in England. He was a fast bowler called Rudy Bryson. He was from Eastern Province as well, where I'm from, where I was born. I don't live there anymore. I live in Cape Town now. And then in later years, I think South Africa had Steve Alworthy, who played for Lancashire. He played for Lancashire for a season or two. And then obviously people like Peter Kirsten, you know, the same sort of era as Kipler Wessels. Peter Kirsten would have been playing for Derbyshire. And those were the names. Jimmy Cook, it was another one, obviously scored bucket loads of runs for Somerset. And being an overseas player for them for years. Garth LaRue was another one who played for Sussex. Proctor, Mike Proctor. So these are all the names that you could follow on. You know, Vince van der Velde. I don't know if you guys are going to know any of or most of these names.
We do, trust me. In particular, Mike Proctor, okay. An absolute legend of Gloucestershire. Legend of Gloucestershire. Yeah. Like we've spoken, well, I say we, Joe, I'm not sure if you've spoken to as many Gloucestershire fans about Mike Proctor, but in particular, slightly older Gloucestershire fans, they remember him incredibly well. He was absolutely lethal as a seam bowler. So I know we're not that old, Ashwell. We can't say that remember them, but I mean, we are, what would we say, au fait?
Familiar.
Familiar. Yeah, familiar. There we go. We're familiar with them, of course, but we didn't get to see them live. Of course, yeah, because we have a combined age of 39 here on the County Cricket podcast. But talking of County Cricket, though, Ashwell, let's go into your playing days then, here in the county circuit in England and Wales. And I suppose before we get into Joe's discussion about Lancashire, which viewers and listeners will be incredibly biased, just going to give you a heads up about that. But before we get into that good stuff, Ashwell, let's talk about Notts. And before we talk about your time at Notts, how did that move actually come about in the first place? How did you actually get that call up to play for Nottinghamshire in 2008?
So the call to play for Notts came at the end of a very successful South African tour of England in 2008. And I think they were the overseas player, which is Adam Bulges, had to go back to Australia for the last part of the season. And I was in England at the time and I was in quite good form. And I actually got a call from a former South African physio who was then working for Nottinghamshire, Craig Smith, and obviously the director of cricket, Mick Muir. He's now director of cricket, I think. Back then he was the head coach. He had spoken to Craig, the physio, to see if he could get hold of me, being part of the South African camp at the time. And they'd asked me to stay on for the remainder of the season, of the county season, at the end of the South African tour of England. So that's basically how it came about. I played for Notts for 6 weeks. At the end of a taxing tour, obviously. And you know, to be fair to myself and to everyone at Notts, they were probably disappointed in my performance. I was disappointed in my performance. You know, I was there for 6 weeks and I didn't really do much for length. But still, it was an honour to represent quite a big club.
Well, exactly. Yeah, Notts are a massive club here in the Midlands. Massive, play at Trent Bridge. It is a world-renowned stadium and they're a massive club. But of course, Ashwell, you aren't really known for that Nottinghamshire stint. You are, of course, known here in the county cricket for your time at Lancs. And I suppose, Joe, I have to pass over to you, mate. Take it away.
Yeah, so I guess the first thing really is like, why Lancs, Ashwell? You know, why? What attracted you to Lancs? You know, what kind of your first impressions of the club and how did the move even happen?
Yeah, so the move came about, obviously, Peter Moore was in charge of England when I had a successful series against England. And he then later, after England, took over Lancashire. And so he contacted me and again, I was only just filling in for Vivek Laxman, who was the overseas player at the time. So I, BBS, I think it was kind of midway into the season where he was away on international duty with India. And I came in for half of the season or so. Actually, it was the start of the season. He was only arriving later. So I came in for the start and I think I had 2 months with Lancs. And there was only five county championship matches in that time. I think I scored 500 runs in the five matches. So it really started well for me, you know, the five matches that I had. I think there were a few one-day matches in between as well. But obviously, you know, my focus was as a test player was the county championship matches. And like I said, in the first five matches for Lancs, I scored 500 runs. And you know, everything sort of happened from there. I still came to an end after 2 months or so. I headed back to SA the following season. I did another short stint of, again, a similar type of period of 2 or 3 months as an overseas player. I had another successful stint. And then the following season, I signed a deal as an overseas player for Lancashire. So, you know, I really enjoyed Lancashire because I played league cricket there as a youngster, 19, 20 years old. I think in 1999 and 2000, I spent two seasons up in the North West League. It's called the Northern League with Morecambe on the Bay. And I played two seasons there. I've got quite a few good friends there still today. You know, lifelong friends, this is what sport does, you know. And so obviously cricket's no different. I've got lifelong friends that I made up in Lancashire. And so it almost felt as though, you know, in a strange way, it felt as though I was kind of a product of Lancashire, having played league cricket in the structures as a youngster and then becoming a full professional playing for the county at the later stage, albeit I was there as an overseas player. You know, I really felt at home in Lancashire. I knew quite a few people that from Morecambe who would come down and support me, even some of the opposition that I had some serious running with in league cricket. You know, they were proud that even though they were from other clubs, St. Andrews and Chorley, etc., these guys, you know, appreciated, you know, that I played the game tough, played the game hard. We had some good battles on the field, but even them, even those guys were proud of the fact that I went on to represent Lancashire, you know. And actually, I played for Lancashire alongside some of the players that represented those clubs. I mean, Crofty is a Blackpool lad through and through. Tom Smith is Chorley through and through. And Alex Davis, obviously, Darwin. I think Darwin now, they're not in the Northern League anymore. They have moved leagues to a different league. So, you know, having sort of played with and alongside and against these guys, the youngsters, and then representing, you know, the county, I really felt at home in Lancashire.
Well, that's really, really good to hear, to be honest. You know, as you say, almost like you're a product of Lancashire's, you know, not youth system as much as such, but, you know, you come through the ranks. It was meant to be, really, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So, yeah, I mean, it's really good to hear. So let's talk then a little bit about relegation, because obviously you were not part of the squad that won the title in 2011,
yeah,
but you were there the year after in 2012 when, you know,
who won it that year? Who won it that year, Jay?
We don't need to talk about who won it that year. That's okay. But you were there in 2012, obviously, when the club got relegated immediately after winning the league. How was that kind of almost coming into the side? Obviously, you weren't involved in 2011, but you still knew the side and stuff. How was that on the club? Was it as tough as it sounds? Obviously, it was a really tough year, but was it that bad?
Yeah, look, I think sometimes, you know, as fans and spectators, I don't think you don't see everything that goes on. To be honest, I don't think that we played that badly that season. If you can remember, I remember it clearly, because from day one when I joined Lancashire until today, you look at the stadium today and it's a world-class stadium. Okay, but that started somewhere. So what I mean by that is, from the time I joined Lancs, the redevelopment of the ground had started. So what that meant was that, as opposed to playing at Old Trafford, we had to play quite a few matches at the outgrounds. When you play at the outground, when you play at Liverpool, for instance, I can remember at least three or four matches in that season with us being in the driving seat. Then maybe you would have a few showers. The ground doesn't drain as well as Old Trafford would have drained in terms of getting water off the pitch, getting play back on. You don't have the same amount of ground staff, etc., to assist with those things in terms of getting play back on. You know, I don't want to knock Egbert and the people there, because they're wonderful people. I had some of my best performances in the Lancashire shirt at Liverpool. But these are the realities with playing at an out ground versus playing at the county ground. And so we had three or four matches where we were, you know, completely dominating them. But you can't get back on the field because you can't get the pitch or the outfield dry enough. The game ends in a draw. You know, two games in a draw, then the next game you lose. Before you know it, you're up against it. And you're running out of fixtures to make up the points. So, you know, this is the perspective. And as I say, as a fan, you don't follow every ball of the season. You know, you're kind of following, but you don't know all of the details. And sometimes those things play a massive role. And I remember that season having to play so many games away from Old Trafford had a big impact on us not being able to get onto the field enough to drive home the advantage when we've been in winning positions, you know. So, and then, as I said, you get to the end of the season, you're running out of matches and you can't make up the points.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I guess, you know, as you say, the club was, or the ground, I should say, was going through some redevelopment. So I guess in the long run, it was worth it. I mean, look at the ground, you say, world-class.
Absolutely.
And still, it's not done as well. You know, they're going to be building another massive stand, you know, in the next couple of years. So, yeah, I mean, like you say, we don't know, me and Aaron, for example, and the listeners don't know really what goes on all the time. Unless you have, like, a documentary, for example, the Mumbai Indians documentary, which kind of, you know, reveals a little bit more. But even so, you actually don't know what goes on. So, yeah, I guess it's... I guess that's just cricket, isn't it? You know, you can't control the weather.
Stuff
like that are out of your hands. You know, certain times, you know, it's your fault if you get out for getting in a bad way or, you know, if you bowl a bad over. But the weather, no one can control that. So...
No, you can't control that.
I guess
it's
just luck of the draw, I guess. But actually, on the topic of outgrounds, just quickly... Just for Lance, because I know there'll probably be another one that you favour quite well, considering some runs you got there once. But just for Lance's main three, Blackpool, Southport and Egbert, what would you say your favourite is?
I really enjoyed Egbert. You know, I think it had a wonderful setting. There had some tennis courts in the back. I had some young...
Yeah.
My kids were very young, so... I could bat and watch them have fun in the tennis courts, just messing around. Obviously, these were some of the advantages for myself, being a family man. You know, at Old Trafford, there isn't that space. So there isn't that space for them to wander around and play and mess around in the puddles at the back or in the tennis court. So I could bat in the middle and be at peace that, you know, my wife doesn't have to run around after them all the time. I could see them playing and having fun in the back in the tennis court. So, you know, I really enjoyed the setting. The fans there were knowledgeable about the game. They always gave us good support. The ground wasn't very big in terms of how many spectators it could hold, but it could hold enough to create a nice atmosphere. You know, it really created a nice atmosphere around the ground. And whenever we played there, the people, you know, of Liverpool and of Lancashire came out to support us. And that was, you know, that was really nice. Like I said, it's unfortunate sometimes with the weather and all that, those things that happened. But, you know, I had a few good performances there. The team had quite a few good performances there. And 9 times out of 10, if the weather was good, you know, it produced the result. The ground produced the result, especially in county championship cricket, you know. So it was a good pitch in terms of producing results. There'd always be something in it, you know, bowling first or in the first innings, and then the spinners, Kegsy, you know, and the rest of the spinners, Pather and these guys, they always enjoy bowling there as well from a spinner's point of view. I really enjoyed playing at Egbert.
Yeah, I mean, personally for me, I would have to say Egbert is my favourite out of the three as well. Aaron, I don't know if you have one. I don't know if you've even been to one.
I haven't, but in terms of just aesthetics, like, so looks.
Yeah.
Liverpool, because of the pavilion. Egbert is an absolute
pavilion's really nice
beauty.
As well.
But with that being said, I know, obviously, Lancs don't play there often, but Sedbergh's another beautiful one, isn't it? In terms of the the scenery and the landscape behind it. But yeah, I'll have to go, Joe. I'll have to go. Hopefully, Lancashire and Warwickshire take each other on one day at one of the outgrounds, and I will see you there, mate.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So yeah, I mean, as I say, Egbert is such a good ground. It really is. So let's kind of change the direction of the conversation then, Ashwell. Let's talk about your decision to become a Colpack. So was that a hard decision to make, knowing that, you know, you'd had so many great memories playing for the Proteas, you know, you scored so many runs for the Proteas. Was that a hard decision to make, pretty much, you know, giving up international cricket to come and play for Lancs?
So no, not at all. Actually, the facts around the situation is that I've been booted by the Proteas. It wasn't my decision to retire. You know, it's been made clear to me that my time was up with the Proteas. So, and at the end of the day, as I said, I first played for Lancashire as an overseas player. And The only reason I ever became a Colback player, believe it or not, was the situation was as such that as a South African playing in England, I had an opportunity to remain an overseas player or just change my registration to Colback. So what it did and what it meant for the club was that I didn't want to move, for instance, and I wanted us to be as strong as possible. So if I changed my registration from overseas to Colback, we would then be able to get another overseas player, which we did. We could get Simon Cattage. Then the year after, I think we got James Faulkner, and he played for a bit. So I didn't want to play for another team. I only wanted to play for Lancashire. And by me changing my registration from overseas player to Colback player, it then allowed us to sign another overseas player, and the team obviously would be stronger. So that's the story behind the Colback.
Well, it works.
Well, sounds like an easy decision. Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't a tough decision at all.
100%. Yeah, there were some great overseas players there that you just named. Who would you say the best that you played with at Lancashire was? Is there one that sticks out, or Colback included as well?
It's a difficult one. Faulkner was probably one of the best, I'd say. I think, in T20 cricket, obviously he was phenomenal. Whiteball cricket. I used to feel next to him sometimes at Meroff or Madonna when he was bowling at the death, he'd tell me what he's going for, Yorker or slow ball, whatever. And sometimes he'd just indicate, haymaker, haymaker. So he'd call his back of the hand slow ball with the haymaker because nobody could hit it. He closed up some games for us in T20 cricket. And obviously he could close out some games. He could close out some games with the bat as well and with the ball. He was one of the best. But look, Simon Cattage was a phenomenal player as well. Very consistent. Yeah. Very consistent in all formats of the game. So, this is the thing. When you're really passionate about playing for a team as I was about playing for Lane, I just wanted to play in the best team. So coming back to the Colback thing, it was an easy decision to change my registration and get another top quality player in to give us the best chance possible, for silverware or promotion or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that is a true passionate Lanx fan there. Not even just a passionate Lanx player, that is a Lanx fan right there. So, that's great to hear. It really is. So you just mentioned promotion there. I mean, we've already talked about relegation once. Let's talk about it again before we talk about, kind of basically your retirement U-turn. So obviously, we suffered another relegation in 2014. That was not the best season, really, let's be honest. It was a tough season. As you said, we don't know the big picture, but from a fan's perspective, it was a tough season.
How did the Blast go as well,
Jeff? In all formats, it was a tough season in all
Who
formats.
Who won the T20 Blast in 2014?
Yeah,
We actually made the final.
Exactly, we did, but Aaron is...
It wasn't all formats.
Well, I mean, we did lose a final still, so that was still annoying.
Yeah, we did, I suppose.
But yeah, I mean, specifically Red Bull cricket, was that basically the reason to decide not to retire? Was that because of relegation? You wanted to help the club fight and get back into Division One?
Yeah, absolutely. I've made my mind up that I was retiring. My eldest son in South Africa was starting school proper. Up until then, he was at nursery school, so I could take him out of school, come to England for 6 months, he could go back. He was just basically play school, if you like. He wasn't proper at school proper. And then at the end of the 2014 season, the next year, he would have to go to school proper. So I decided that, I'm calling it quits. My wife and my family have sacrificed a lot of years for me over the years, or a lot of time, and all the sacrifices that have been made for me. And I felt that, you know, my son needs to go to school properly. He needs proper grounding, etc. I don't want him to be in and out of school. And obviously, I mean, as you know now, we got relegated. The club approached me to try and play one more season. I was still betting reasonably well. You know, I was still putting the runs on the board. And, you know, I made a decision to play one more season. A big part was who we're getting, which players are we going to have, and, you know, what are the chances. And obviously, I felt that we had, in fact, I mean, county cricket is, it's a strange one, you know, because you can be in the second division 1 year, you get promoted, and when you get promoted, you feel like you can win the first division, you know. That's what it felt like with Lancashire. That's what it felt like with Lancashire. I never really felt that we had a bad team at any stage when I was there. We were relegated twice, but we didn't have a bad team. So, you know, in fact, if I'm really honest with you, after we got promoted, I had a word with one or two of the top brass, as you guys call it. And so my last season in county cricket, 2015, I was the leading run scorer in county cricket. I scored, I think, over 1,400 runs. And obviously, on the back of that, the club was kind of, or not the club, the club wanted me to stay. The coaching staff was obligated to ask me if I wanted to carry on playing. You know, I just scored more runs than anyone in England. Do you want to carry on playing? And again, it was the same thing. I honestly felt that if we held on to certain players with one or two recruitments, that that we would have a very good chance of winning the first division the next season. You know, our obviously sharing, being quite close to one or two of the players, and hearing about who's going to be offloaded and the club going, you know, thinking of rebuilding the team, going younger. I then felt that it might take a younger team a little bit more time to challenge for the championship. And in the end, because one or two people, you know, weren't going to be there, I decided to the time of that.
Yeah. I mean, considering you were going to retire the year before, you know, 1,400 runs is outrageous. It really is.
And, do you want to know the stats? I've got the exact stats.
Go on.
For everyone out there, including the listeners, because, again, this was just mind-blowing. As I said, your final season in county cricket, what a way to bow out this was. 1,478 runs at an average of 67.18. And, of course, we will talk about that partnership with Alviro, but what a fantastic way to bow out from an iconic stint at Lancashire County Cricket Club. Incredible, Ashwell. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, thanks. But like I say, I suppose in the end that also played a role. That you know, the last thing I wanted to be as a player, and let's face it, guys. Let's be honest about it. Obviously, ECB have now kind of stopped all the cold pack stuff, at registration, etc. Because it was seen as opportunities taken away from domestic players, from local English players. To be honest with you, I never regarded myself as a county player, as a Colpack player, even though I was registered as a Colpack player. I always saw myself as an overseas player, adding value to the team with my runs or my contribution on the field, but also with a younger player. And we had some serious young talent and now, looking back at how the guys are going, you know, it really is pleasing to see them perform. Alex Davis, I'm thinking about Liam Livingston. You know, unfortunately, Haseeb has moved on since then to Nottinghamshire. You know, Tom Bailey, These guys were all youngsters in the team when I was there, and I had really good relationships with all of them, and to see them perform now, you know, is really you know, encouraging to see. But coming back to my point, the last thing I wanted to be was somebody, and to be fair, to be honest, you know, again, you know, as spectators, as fans, you guys won't be aware of what's going on. But on the field of play, you know, as Coldpack players, you hear about it a lot. You hear about the fact that you guys are only here for the money, you're only here taking opportunities away from the local lads, etc. And that's the last thing that I wanted to be seen as, somebody who's just coming to England year after year just for the money. For me, it was really important to put the runs on the board, help the young lads, and let the performance speak for itself, you know. And it was never a case of only coming to England for the money. Like I say, I had really good relationships with the people in Lancashire way before I even played for Lancashire. So it was just me coming to do the best that I can for the county.
Fair enough, Ashwell. Yeah. And the way in which you've spoken about Lancs, I mean, we wouldn't even make that suggestion. It's about money. The fact is, you loved this county, and you still do. The way in which you speak about Lancashire, obviously I'm a Warwickshire fan, but it's even putting a smile on my face. It's nice to see someone from an overseas country so passionate about a certain county. I know, Joe, you've got a massive smirk on your face right now because it's Lancs, but it is genuinely very, very nice. It's heartwarming to hear. And of course, it's good that you still look back on those memories incredibly fondly. They're obviously quite close to your heart. And I just wanted to touch upon one memory in particular, if I could, Ashwell, and that is the ridiculous 501-run partnership with Alvaro Peterson at Colwyn Bay. What on earth happened there?
Do you remember? It was outrageous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I can remember. I'm not sure if I came in. I think I came in at number four. And Alvaro, obviously, he opened, or he came in at three, he was in before me. We lost one, then we lost two. I can't remember the score when I came in. And they actually started really well. You know, they've been tying us down, and I couldn't get it through the field. I couldn't get it through. They really hit the line, and then and I was getting frustrated, and I said to Alvaro, you know, we're just blocking here. We're going to have to make a play. I mean, I know it's four-day cricket, but we'd be just standing and blocking. And I said, because it wasn't, you know, there wasn't anybody really quick in the lineup. I said, I'm coming out to the crease and I'm just going to walk it one and two and see if I can get one and two away. And literally, we had to make a play. Otherwise, it's going to be blocking now. So, you know, I came down, walked in the line, flicked one or two over the leg side, over square leg. And then the field kind of spread out because we just started playing with a bit of intent. And then from there, I mean, the sun was out. Yeah, we just put the foot down. Well, not all the time, but we started playing. Then, you know, I mean, I wasn't really aware of any of the records. But every time, you know, when you're in a big partnership or you're making a big score, from time to time, you get really lazy in certain movements or in concentration, etc., etc. And then you get some obscure single that you just think it's just another single. And then the crowd would kind of start applauding. And then it would be a record for the third wicket partnership or whatever the case would be. And then another half an hour later or 40 minutes later, they'd start clapping again and it'd be another record. And so these type of things just kept us going eventually until, you know, I think eventually you're like, okay, well, you know, at I think lunchtime, tea time, whenever, I can't remember the intervals, people would say to us, you know, you entitled this target or whatever, only so many more to this target. And then eventually we just kept going and going, you know. So, yeah, I mean, it's an unbelievable effort. I'm just really proud, and you know, people sometimes at home, because Alvaro and myself, we were born like two blocks away from each other, you know, in PE, in Port Elizabeth, in South Africa. And some of our friends back home would say, "Yeah, you guys are pulling all the kids, man." And I would say, you know, at least we can answer back and say that the pitch wasn't that flat because we won the game. You know, we actually won the game. It wasn't just a flat one back for days and just collect as many as you can type of thing.
Well, that's what's so ridiculous about this partnership. And, you know, I love a stat, and I have got all the stats here, as you know. But the fact is, the fact that Glamorgan was skittled for 193 in their second innings after Lancs put 698 for five declared does show that there was something in that pitch. And that 501-run partnership is the highest in Lancashire's history. The previous record was 371 runs, which was set by Frank Watson and Ernest Tulsley against Surrey at Old Trafford in 1928. So that was years in the making. Wow. It's also the most runs conceded by Glamorgan in any wicket. So for any wicket in the entirety of their history, you were the 13th pair in first-class history to register a 500-run partnership. And it is the second-highest third-wicket partnership in county cricket history, the first being the 523-run partnership between Carberry and McKenzie in the game between Hampshire and Yorkshire in 2011, I believe that was. So an absolutely remarkable partnership. And I'm just looking at the strike rates as well, Ashwell. And my co-host, Joe, loves strike rate. He doesn't like players who go at 28, 30. That's my kind of style. But just looking at the strike rate here, 111.76, scoring 261, a career best score, from 258 balls, which included 35 fours and 7 sixes. Remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. It's one of the most insane partnerships that we've ever seen, isn't it, Joe?
I've never seen anything like that before on a cricket field, and I don't think I'm ever going to again. It was outrageous. It's easily the best thing that I've ever seen. And, you know, like, I remember some of the straight sixes that you and Alvaro hit. Like, obviously, there's a road right behind. I can't remember what the road's called, but there's a road right behind one of the ends of the ground. The road must have just got absolutely peppered with sixes. It was ridiculous. So, yeah, I don't even know. It was outrageous because I saw like the whole partnership as well. I was lucky enough to be there for it. So it was remarkable. But would you say that's in your whole career, would you say that is your best ever individual moment or like best of individual feat?
In county cricket, at first class level, what I mean by that is obviously test match cricket is another level. But in first class cricket, I think that was, you know, people always realize, I mean, I played 66 tests for my country, and the person that people witnessed play test cricket was a blocker. You know, to be honest, that person was a blocker. But you talk about that innings and the strike rate of that innings against Glamorgan. That's how I really enjoyed playing cricket. I like playing my shot. I like playing my game. But unfortunately, in test cricket, that's not what I did. And I have my reasons for that. I have, you know, a lot of things happened in my career why I had to go that route in terms of playing test cricket, in terms of securing my place in the team, et cetera, or perhaps where I batted in the test match lineup was always kind of in the middle order. So, you know, having to sometimes resurrect things when it's not going that well, you know. But that innings against Glamorgan, that's how I like to play. By nature, you know, coming back to football, I was always an attacker. You know, I play out wide in the wing, or I play up front, and I'm an attacker. And I want to score goals, and I want to have assists, and those type of things, you know. So the fact that I played cricket or test cricket in the way that I did, you know, I suppose that, in a way, I sacrificed a lot. But those were also learnings from early ages. Was a young professional making a flash at 50 and 14 and giving your wicket away. You know, you don't want to go your whole career being known as somebody who could only make flashy 30s and 40s. And so my test career obviously took another turn. But that innings there is kind of how I like to play the game. Like I said, you mentioned the strike rate. It really was, you know, we've got to do something. I can't just keep blocking like this all day. So
just show an intent.
Kind of made a, you show some sort of intent, made a play. You know, like I say, they then sort of took a step back, and then from there we just played, you know, and just enjoyed ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what makes that partnership even more remarkable was, you know, it was done on a club wicket. And, you know, as good as Colwyn Bay is, and, you know, I reckon it could be one of the best outground wickets out there, certainly for batting. You know, at the end of the day, it's just a club ground. You know, it's not like you've done it at a test venue, which makes it even more remarkable. So, yeah, as I say, comfortably the best thing that I've ever seen on a cricket field. I genuinely don't know if that partnership will ever be broken for Lancs. I genuinely don't. I mean, if it took best part of 100 years for you, and yeah, Alvira,
it was a long time.
It genuinely could never be broken. So, yeah. And speaking of strike rate, I guess, you know, kind of just to wrap up, we have to talk about the 2015 T20 Blast quickly as well, because that was a very interesting year. We only got through fourth in the group. So I remember Lancs only just snuck through in the quarterfinals. We got through in very lucky circumstances. I'm sure you remember that last ball very well. And obviously then in the final, it was a lot easier. And then the semi-final was a bit close, but in the final, certainly, it was pretty comfortable. So, yeah, what are some of your best memories from that campaign, from that 2015 T20 campaign?
Yeah, look, I mean, there was some... The season before when we lost in the final, we actually had a much better campaign overall. I think we were on this roll in this competition. It felt like we were unstoppable, you know, until the final. I think it was Lottie Evans who smashed us in the final, and you know, he played unbelievable innings. From we were in a very good position, and then we sort of bombed out in the final. But the following season, we didn't get it going. You know, we didn't get it going at all throughout the competition. We knew we had it, but also the team, for some reason, didn't feel as strong in all the departments as we were the season before. I can't remember who it was that was missing, but we missed some players, and we didn't get it going, you know.
I think McLennan was there the year before in the groups. Mitch McLennan was there the year before in the group stage. And obviously he wasn't there the next year. I think, if I remember right, he came in 2013. But
so then, you know, we scrape into the the semis, or into the quarterfinal. Sorry, in fourth position, as you said. Then we went down to Kent. We're absolutely dominating the game. I think I got out for about 50 or 60.
You buy for like a while, didn't you? Kind of like dominating the bowlers, and then you were your wicket was the catalyst.
Yeah, absolutely. We kind of cruised in the game, and then I got out. Then we lost another couple of wickets, and then in the end, I think Aaron and Jimmy scrambled at two to get over the line.
I mean, that was crazy, because obviously we only needed to tie. Clearly, everyone in the dugout knew we only needed two to tie, judging by the celebrations. And, you know, I think it was Faulkner who hit the shot, and it literally could obviously bounce off the stumps, but that could have just stopped at the bottom, at the base of the stumps. It could have gone gone anywhere. And thankfully, it went into the gap, and they got back for two. But I mean, yeah, that was an outrageous. And also in that game as well, there was that catch.
There was a gap between Crofty and Lily.
Lily, yeah. And that was, and it was Lily who did all the acrobatics and pulled it back. And then obviously Carl just stood there and got credit for it. And that was an outrageous catch. So, yeah, I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, unbelievable. So look, I mean, then, yeah, I mean, final day, I mean, you guys must have been there.
I was there, yeah.
You know, we win 2 years in a row. I know the 100 is starting this season. The ECB must have their reasons for the change in the competition or starting the 100. But, you know, finals day in domestic cricket, I mean, I only played domestic cricket in two countries, England and South Africa. And I'm I would be really surprised if there was if there was a better atmosphere or a better day to be a part of in terms of the domestic cricket at first class level. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, going to finals day is a really, it's like going, I think if you have to compare it to football, it probably feel like going to the FA Cup final.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Because it's like for your team to be in, you know, all the fans make their way there in the morning, you know, you kind of get there and there's four sets of supporters, you know, obviously trying to, you know, hoping that the teams will get into the final. You get there and we, I think on both occasions, we played our semi-final the second game. So there's already kind of a buzz. There's already a buzz in the ground when you get there. You then get through to the final. I don't know if you remember in 2014 as well that we had an injury or two and Freddie had to play in the final.
Yes.
Played in the final.
Yeah, getting Ian Bell out, which was a bit frustrating on my end. Joe, I imagine you were celebrating.
Yeah, yeah, that was what a comeback. What a comeback. Yeah. Freddie, that was. What a comeback.
So Fred was like nowhere, and then the next thing, you know, mid-season, he like started training again. He wanted to play. And then we just couldn't get him in anywhere. And then, lo and behold, we had an injury in the semi-final, and Fred there playing in the final gets the first wicket in the final as well. So
I mean, you take him, don't you? He's not exactly a bad player to have on his side.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, these are some of the, I'm just remembering some of the moments. And I remember that moment where Fred took that wicket. Again, I was fielding at mid-off. I was the first one on top of his shoulders, the big man standing in the middle of the pitch as he did when he took a wicket. I was the first one on top of his shoulders. Now, I mean, I scored some runs in the semi-final, but I remember these types of things, the cheer and the roar around the ground, really taking this wicket. Like, this guy has come from, you know, this cult hero has come back into the team, he's taken this first wicket, and you just knew when his name was on the starting lineup, you just knew he was going to do something, you know.
Yep.
And, you know, obviously got the first wicket. Then the next year, in the final, again we had some injuries. And I think it was Gav Griffith made his debut in the competition, in the final.
Gavin Griffith and George Edwards. Yeah, both of them made a debut in the semi-final, I think, or might be the final. Yeah,
no, it was the final.
Brilliant.
Yeah. It was the final.
Gav made his debut in the final. Nobody had ever seen him before in the opposition. Obviously, he'd been on our staff for a couple of years. He had got the odd game here and there and in county cricket. And then he got to make his debut in the Vitality Blast final.
Pressure.
You know? And he bowled four overs, 1 for 12 in the final. Mm. That's what he delivered.
It's outrageous. So, it was.
Outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. You know, and then, you know, like I say, just unbelievable performance from some of these guys. And with length, you know, it just always felt like these things can happen to us. You know, it's like, yes, people might write us off. People might not think that we have a great team on paper, on the team sheet. You know, we might have one or two youngsters around every case maybe, but in the dressing room, we always had that kind of spirit that whoever came we backed him. You know, we backed him. If it was a young lad who had to come in, we'd back him. And we just had the spirit that, you know, we could go up against anybody. And they had some good players as well.
They had David Willey in the button, didn't they?
Yeah, David Willey. They had quite a good team because there was a period there for 2 or 3 years where they made it to the final. I think they won it the next year, 2016. Yeah. Northern, they won it the following year. So they'd been to finals day a few times in a row as well. And they had a good side in the competition.
Yeah.
But there we were with Gav making his debut in the final and getting home, you know.
Remarkable. Because I seem to remember... Faulkner dislocated his finger as well in the in the, like before, so he couldn't bowl at the death. So as you say, it came to Gavin at the end, and I mean, the rest is history. Obviously, we had Joss available as well in pretty much the whole tournament. So you know that was really good. And yeah, it's just really, really good.
Unbelievable time. Alex Davis, actually, I was blocking it at the one end, and Alex Davis, he gave us a blistering start in the final.
Yeah, you got man of the match, didn't he, in the final?
I think he did.
Yeah, I think he got like 46 or 47 or something. So,
yeah,
I mean, you can't really ask for much more, to be honest. From, you know, a young homegrown player steps up and does that, gets man of the match in the final. And then, you can't really ask for much more. Presented to him, the man of the match award presented by others as well. He's obviously a Lanx legend. So, you can't really ask for much more. But, yeah, what a campaign that was. It turned out to be anyway. As you say, it's a bit rocky at times, but at the end of the day, we won the T20, so you can't really ask for much more.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, the important thing is winning the silverware. But Ashwell, I mean, we're pretty much almost at an end to today's episode of the Cat Cricket Podcast with yourself, mate. But just before we do end today's episode, some fantastic stories about Lanx and finals day there. But if you could just name one thing from all of the years or just your experiences in county cricket, what is the one thing that you miss the most about playing in the county circuit for Lancashire?
That's a tough one. County cricket is different to you know, like I said, I've only played professional cricket really in two countries. When I say professional cricket at first class level, obviously I played test cricket around the world, and that's different because you expect crowds, etc. But, you know, in county cricket, you'll find 1,000 or 2,000 in a county match that you won't find anywhere else in four-day cricket. I'm talking about four-day cricket specifically. You know, you'll get 2,000 come and watch a four-day game, and you know, when you pass 50, there's a cheer. When you get to a milestone, there's always a clapping and an appreciation of the performance. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, and I have to give it to the Lancashire people, we'd appreciate our performances our crowd would, from the opposition as well, you know. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I have to throw this in, guys. The Roses matches, obviously, full house at Lancashire. Full house at Lancashire. We always, you know, whenever we play them in the Vitality Blast in front of the full house, you know, the atmosphere, whether it was at Headingley or at Old Trafford, you know, there will always be full house. And the atmosphere would be electric. The atmosphere would be electric. And fortunately, you know, we got over the line in the time that I was, more than what they did. Sometimes from some precarious positions where we thought maybe it got, you know, Butler and Butler and Faulkner, the one you're hitting from nowhere.
Yeah, that was an outrageous game as well. And then Maxwell obviously missed the run out, didn't he? And obviously he knew he was going to sign for Lanx years later, so he's about to help Lanx. But would you say the Roses games are as close to experiencing an international game, you know, in domestic cricket as you've come to? Or would you say how?
Absolutely. I don't. Well, talk about the Roses T20 matches. I mean, they are as good as, in terms of atmosphere, they're as good as anything in the world. You know, as any experience that I've had in terms of cricket in my career, I mean, there isn't an empty seat in the stand, not for a home fixture against Yorkshire. And, you know, every season when the new fixtures come out, that's obviously the one that's highlighted the most, when the Roses fixtures are going to take place. And the atmosphere in some of those matches were unbelievable, you know, second to none, goosebumps type of things. And to be fair, you know, they've had some pretty good lineups with some stars in their team over the years, and we've had some good lineups out there as well in the middle, and they've been really good battles. And like I say, fortunately, in my time, we came out on top more than they did.
Well, yeah, of course. Any Lancashire
fans. That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Yeah, that'll make them happy as well. But Ashwell, I mean, that does bring us to an end to what has been an absolutely fascinating podcast. I must admit, this has been absolutely fantastic. How many episodes are we in now, Joe? 82, 83? This is up there for me. This is probably one of my favourites, to be honest, Ashwell.
100% is my favourite.
Yeah, of course, you're interviewing your favourite player. But Ashwell, before we end today's episode, do you just have anything to kind of, I don't know, end on? Anything to plug or promote? Social media channels? Anything else like that, for example?
No, look, I mean, guys, I'm not promoting. I'm not here to promote anything. Obviously, I'm a keen follower still of County Cricket, following the young lads I used to play with. I'm also a coach these days, so I have some of my players playing in the county circuit at the moment. So I'm on top of their scores. I might not be watching all the scores, but I've got Hashim Amla still playing for Surrey. Mm-hmm. I've got
not
David
bad player
Biddingham
to have.
Yeah, I've got David Biddingham playing up at Durham. And I've got Wayne Parnell playing for North End, so obviously still following their scores as well as Lancashire. And you know, as I said, a timely win against the old enemy in the last game. So the timing of this podcast couldn't be any better, guys. Getting one over the Yorkies. So yeah. I mean, I'm a keen follower of the game, County Cricket, and thanks for having me on the show. You know, I really appreciate it, and it's good to share some of the fond memories that I had, about my time in England.
Well, I tell you what, Ashwell, the pleasure has been absolutely all ours, mate, and you are always welcome back here on the County Cricket Podcast. It's been absolutely brilliant discussing all things Lancashire, Notts and County Cricket with you on the podcast today. But that does bring us to an end to what's been an absolutely fantastic episode of the County Cricket Podcast. To all of the listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.